We're on the road. Where transportation goes, community grows. Welcome to On the Road with the MTA. And welcome to a very special edition of On the Road with MTA. I am Jay Gibbons alongside with Stephanie Kay from the MTA. What do we have today?
Oh, I'm really, really excited about this one. I mean, we have somebody who is so very special and so very busy, and you've seen him on TV, you've seen him on radio, but we have him on the line right now, and I want to introduce you to somebody that I think is one of my biggest inspirations. It's John Quinones. And now this man is amazing because when he started school, he couldn't even speak English. And he was told all of his life, you can't do it because of your accent, because of your skin color. And look what he's done today. You may have seen the show, What Would You Do? I love that you bring people to forward to make them realize what they should be doing from their heart.
Thank you, Stephanie. It's good to be with you.
Well, thank you. I know you said you're working on a project right now about immigration.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a reporter for ABC, as you know, in addition to doing What Would You Do, which we're not filming right now because of the pandemic.
Sure.
But I'm still a reporter for ABC. I'll always be a journalist in my heart, of course. And I do stories for 2020 and Nightline, Good Morning America. We're doing an hour on immigration down along the Texas-Mexican border for ABC. Actually, it's for Hulu. It's going to air on April the night of April 8th on Hulu and on ABC News Live. And basically, we're looking at what's going on down there, how the conditions that some of these teenagers are having to live in, or children being brought over by parents. It's a really difficult issue that there are no answers for, and both administrations had different approaches to it. But in the end, they wind up holding kids in detention, and the conditions are not obviously ideal.
It totally breaks my heart when I see that on TV. I want to adopt all of them. I want to hug them and bring them home. I can't imagine how you must feel seeing all that so up close and personal.
Yeah, it's tough. They won't let us in. The government has been very hesitant to let us inside the detention centers because of COVID, they say. And I think also they just don't want, you know, the press to see the conditions they're in, although, you know, depending on who you listen to, some of the detention centers are good enough, and others are not so great. So I wish we could get in. So we're still lobbying the government to let us in.
Well, good for you. Keep it up. Because you do this good work. We need you out there, buddy. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Steph.
Hey, where are you from, John? Where are you living now?
Right now I'm in Dallas, getting ready to go to the border and do a story, the immigration story there. You know, originally born and raised in San Antonio, and then lived between Dallas and New York because that's where our headquarters for ABC News is, in New York.
Okay. Married with children?
Yes. Married. I have three kids. All of them are in the business. You know, one is a producer at CNN. The other one is a producer at MTV. My daughter, Andrea, and my son, Nico, runs a production company for media in Miami, Florida, where I spend a lot of my time. So three kids and a grandson. My oldest son had a baby a year ago, Luca, and I haven't seen him in months because of COVID, but I plan to see that, to fix that soon.
Oh, aren't they the best grandbabies? It's like a do-over, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't spend enough time. He's beautiful. So I'm looking forward to seeing him soon.
Yeah, I know you're coming to Mott Community College, which I graduated from, on April 1st. And what all are you going to be talking about there? What are you going to be presenting?
Well, unfortunately, it has to be virtual, so I won't be physically going there. But, of course, we'll be on, you know, online talking to students in the early afternoon and then to some of the VIP donors for this Ballinger event and speech that they've asked me to participate in. Peter Jennings spoke there, and I think Geraldo Rivera, and some big names that are my heroes when I was getting started. So I'm going to just talk about, you know, ethics, social issues, ethics, morals. Given the show that I do, What Would You Do? It's given me a sort of a fly in the wall kind of observation post to watch how people react when they witness an injustice. And I've been doing the show for 13, 14 years now. So I'll be talking about that and about my life. And as you mentioned, the difficulties I had growing up as a Mexican American child in San Antonio, Texas, not speaking English. And even though my family, I was born and raised in the U.S., and so were my parents, by the way. But in San Antonio, Texas, you didn't have to learn English because the Hispanic population is so large that everything around my little barrio, where I live, neighborhood where I live, was in Spanish. You know, the church was in Spanish, and the stores and everywhere we did business in. And my parents didn't speak English because they had to drop out of school in the third grade to pick cotton. And to work, my mother worked cleaning houses on the rich part of town. So because of all that, they didn't learn English and spoke Spanish at home. So when I went to the first grade, it was a little tough, as you can imagine. But I got over it, and I had my sights set on being a journalist someday. And my mother gave me great inspiration, and my dad worked so hard to get me and my sisters into college, and I was a first-generation college student. And I got a degree and then wound up getting a fellowship to Columbia University, the journalism school, the graduate school of journalism, and the rest is history. Then I got hired in television in Chicago and then hired by Peter Jennings and the ABC folks in New York to be a network correspondent, which was my dream. And I got to cover all of Latin America and Cuba and Nicaragua and El Salvador, and then I went to Africa and I covered the Gulf War. It's been a great 38 years.
Well, you are such an inspiration. I have to tell you, I know they said you can't do it because your accent. I love that part. I think your accent's the most charming. And I love that you reach into our hearts and make us want to do the right thing with that.
That's what it's all about. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I said, of all the times you've been out there and recording and doing this, what has been some of the most memorable for you, or the most meaningful, or the most powerful that you can remember?
Well, I love the fact that in every scenario we do, and a lot of it is about racism and bullying and discrimination against someone because of their weight or because of their religion. In every one of our scenarios, there's a good person, or in some cases, several, who step up and do the right thing. Yes, there are people who will ignore a situation when it involves injustice because it's scary to get involved. You know, you've heard the stories of some good Samaritan stepping in and trying to do the right thing, and then they wind up being shot or victimized somehow or yelled at. So most of us would rather not get involved, would rather mind our own business and keep walking. But what's really inspiring is those folks who do step in, you know, and sometimes it's the person you would least expect. But in every one of them, every one of our scenarios, there's a good person who at the end raises their voices, sounds the alarm, and comes to the aid of the victim and lends them a helping hand. To me, that's so heartwarming and inspiring, and it reminds us that this is a great world and this is a great country after all. We hear all the bad news, of course, you know, that, and then there is. We got a lot of stuff to work on in this country when it comes to caring for a fellow human being, especially those who may be different from us. But we've also made some good progress, you know, and that's what warms my heart. I guess one of my favorites was when we were doing something on an interracial couple in Harlem being criticized, a black man for dating a white girl. And we had done it in a white community, and then we tried doing it in a black community in Harlem, where all of the people inside this barber shop were African American. And we had an African American stylist start criticizing the black man who was getting a haircut for being with a blonde girl. And she was saying things like, you know, why don't you date a black woman? You know, aren't there enough strong black women in the world for you to be dating? And he said, I love this girl. She's my girlfriend. And we were wondering what people would say. And sure, and you know, everyone in that barbershop, Stephanie, stepped in to defend the white girl. We thought that other people would agree with the racist actor. And no, they didn't. Every single one of them, came to the defense of the young girl, including one woman who was getting her hair cut, and she had no idea she was on hidden camera. She steps up. Her name is Marsha Bonner. And she says, well, I'm gay. Do you have something against gays? And our actress says, no, I don't. I'm just talking about black men dating black women and not white women. And she said, well, What if that person, what if that young lady was lying on the sidewalk bleeding? Would you stop and help her, or would the color of her skin keep you from doing that? And then she said, listen, it's all about hugs. And the girl said, hugs? What do you mean? She goes, hugs. H-U-G-S. Helping us grow spiritually.
And oh, it wow. Just,
oh, my God. She stood up and she embraced both girls and said, look at the two of you, the black girl and the white girl. She says, there's so much more in common. You know, you're both beautiful. So, you know, let's take it one step at a time and be a little kind to her. And I just, everyone was in tears behind the scenes. And I came out and it was just a wonderful experience. So that one stays in my mind more than the others.
That gave me goosebumps. I still have goosebumps. That was a wonderful story on that one. Did you, was this your idea? Did you make this up? Was it your concept to start this?
Yeah, it was about 14 years ago. We were looking for ways to contribute something to 2020. And it was actually the last segment. Back then, 2020 would have like four different stories in the hour, like 60 Minutes does today. There were four different stories. And at the end, they had a kind of a kicker story that would make you smile. And we thought, why don't we use hidden cameras to gauge, you know, the kindness of people or the lack thereof. And we had read an article in the New York Times about called The Ethicist. And the writer talked about how when he was at the park, he was a new dad, he would see nannies and babysitters not taking care of the children they're supposed to be taking care of, right? Ignoring them and being, you know, while they're on their phones and texting. And meanwhile, the child is running around in danger. So he said, how do you tell the parents of that child that the nanny is doing a lousy job? So he wrote an article about that. And we said, we can do that better. What if we put hidden cameras in the bushes at a park where nannies take children to play, and we have an actress play the part of a neglectful babysitter and an actor playing the part of a child. What will people do if this child, you know, is running into traffic and stuff or getting close to danger, not into traffic, but, you know, wandering away while the babysitter, who's an actress, is too busy, FaceTiming or whatever on her phone. So we did that, and it was wonderful how people stepped up and helped the little boy and put a note in his backpack to tell his mother and father that to call them because their nanny was doing a lousy job. They kind of snuck a note in the little boy's backpack. And that was one of the novel ideas they had to tell the parents. So that one did very well, and ABC liked it, and they said, can you do another one? I said, yeah, I think we can do another one. And they said, can you do three different scenarios? And we said, yes. And then they said, can you do an hour? And I said, we can put an hour together. And then they said, can you do 3 hours, 6 hours? And now we're doing 10 hours for ABC. And we've done that every year, as I said, for the last 13 years. And we'll be back. Right now we can't film because of COVID. Right. But ABC, I understand, wants more scenarios in the fall.
Great. Well, I can't wait to watch those because you've made that just so much in the forefront of do the right thing. You know, what would you do? What would you want somebody to do for you if you were in that situation? So I'm so proud of you for doing that and for everything that you've done, overcoming so much. You are definitely an inspiration. We know you are a good guy. We know you are fun and you are kind. And you see people on TV, you don't know how they are until you talk to them. I did radio for 21 years, so I had a chance to meet a lot of different celebrities. And So who's been like your favorite person you've met, your celebrity or your news person? Who's like really kind and just like you?
You know, when I was a local reporter in Chicago, and by the way, I worked picking cherries in Michigan in your state there when I was 13 years old. My dad, you know, he was laid off from work, so we became migrant farm workers for that summer. And we went to Northport, Michigan, north of Traverse City. Mm. And we picked cherries, and then we went down to Ohio, where we picked tomatoes outside of Toledo. But when my first job in television was a local reporter in Chicago, where I went undercover, and I posed as an illegal immigrant coming into the U.S., or undocumented, should I say. And I swam across the Rio Grande, and I got a job at a restaurant. It was a great story, and it won my first Emmy Award. And it got me, more importantly, to the attention of ABC. And I guess when you ask who my role model or my mentor of all of them, I guess Peter Jennings. He was a wonderful anchorman, as you might remember, at ABC.
Oh, yes.
And he was just so classy and such a great journalist. I'll never forget the words he told me when I was covering something in Central America, Nicaragua. And an interview that I had with the president of Nicaragua fell through. I had promised it to Peter Jennings and World News, and then they called me to cancel it. So now I have nothing for the evening news, and they had made a hole in the broadcast for my piece that I was now no longer going to be able to fulfill. And I thought, when I called New York to tell them that my interview had canceled with the president, I thought Peter Jennings, I was shaking in my boots, you know, I thought he was going to yell at me or that I was going to get fired, you know. And instead, Peter Jennings, you know, I was a young 29-year-old reporter. He gave me some words of advice that I carry to this very day. He said, John, this is going to happen in your career when someone cancels something that they promised you. He said, it's going to happen. It's happened to me. He said, listen, young man, don't worry so much about talking to the movers and the shakers of the world. You know, presidents of countries and politicians, presidents of corporations. He said, those people, they can always get their message out. They can always write a press release, right? And get their message out. He says, talk to the real people out there. Don't talk to the movers and the shakers of the world. Talk to the moved and the shaken. In other words, talk to the real people. You know, the campesinos in Central America who were affected by the civil wars and natural disasters and catastrophes. You know, you as a Hispanic reporter can go into the countryside and do stories that even I, Peter Jennings, can't do, and give a voice to people who don't have a voice. So that's what I did for the next 15 years, traipsing around Central America and Latin America, following the advice of Peter Jennings. I love that. Don't talk to the movers and shakers. Talk to the moved and the shaken.
I love that, you know, because MTA, Mass Transportation Authority, they do so much to help the veterans and the seniors and the homeless. I mean, if people need rides, we give them a ride to get their COVID shots or to get the, you know, to the pharmacy and to the grocery store and to the doctors. So you do have to talk to those people that are making it happen, the people that are actually out there and living their lives. And I've just learned so much from listening to you, and I love that. I had the best compliment ever in the radio station. One of the young girls started as a intern, and then she made it into the sales, and then she was making her way up into management. And she said that I stuck out to her because I treated her as an intern the same way I treated her as a manager. I never made somebody else more important than the other. And that's what you have to do, is just make everybody feel important, listen to all the stories.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Congratulations on that. You know, we all have to do it.
Thank you, John. You are a class act. I knew you were. You can usually tell, like when you said Peter Jennings, I could tell on television he was a class act. He was a great guy. You don't really know until you talk to somebody, but so glad to hear that. You're both very, very good.
Dan Rather, who's from Texas also, spent all those years at CBS. He wrote a book called The Camera Never Blinks. And basically, what he's saying is the camera captures you for what you are. It's hard to fake it unless you're a very good actor, unless you're Meryl Streep. You know, journalists, we're not actors. And when the camera's on, it doesn't blink. So it captures us for what we are. And good or bad, I would like to think that that's me coming through the screen somehow. And I don't know. I just can't fake it.
Nope, and you can tell. You're so very sincere. You're so sincere. You're so kind. And I had another compliment too. Somebody said, well, you sound just like you do on the radio. You're just the same as on air as off air. A lot of people have a persona and they come on television or radio, but you have to be yourself, John. Yes, absolutely.
You've given us some inspiration. That's all we got.
I could talk to you all day. I love this. Thank you so much for taking your time and your busy schedule to talk to us. And do you have any last words? Like, what recommendation would you give people listening, or what kind of word of advice? I love what you said far, but leave us.
Yeah, especially to that community that suffered through Flint, that suffered through so much, you know, in recent years. You know, just keep your eyes on the prize. You know, never take no for an answer. One thing I learned, you know, when I was being told that I'd never be a TV reporter, that I didn't have what it takes, that my accent sounded funny, and I just worked real hard to overcome that. I love accents. I love being Mexican-American. I love being an American, of course, too. But the key in my case was, you know, to keep your eyes on the things that really matter in the world. I'll never forget the words my mother gave, advice my mother gave me when I was going to school and we couldn't afford a real lunch. I mean, we would take bean refried tacos, you know, refried beans and flour tortillas for lunch. And I was embarrassed that as a Mexican kid, you know, that was my lunch, a couple of bean and tortilla tacos. And my mother said to me one day, she said, son, don't, and I was also embarrassed. I didn't have clothes, nice clothes all the time.
Aww.
You know, listen, you know, the clothes you wear, at least we wash them, right? The clothes you have to wear every other day, we wash them, right, on the days you don't wear them. And she said, don't worry about that. And don't be embarrassed about taking bean and tortilla tacos for lunch. She says, because what really matters in this world is what's in your brain, in your cabeza, in your brain, and what's in your corazón, your heart.
Aww.
That's what kept me going, that piece of advice. And that's what I would tell the folks at Flint, Michigan. You know, just never take no for an answer. Keep moving forward.
Well, your mother sounds like a saint. She sounds like such a wonderful woman. Is she still with you?
No, Maria, she passed away when about 20 years ago. And my father, Bruno, you know, he lived till 92. He lived to a nice older age. He also passed away. But I have my two sisters and nephews and nieces in San Antonio still, and I go there all the time. It takes me back, and it's important not to forget where you come from. You know, it really is, because that'll dictate where you're headed. And it also keeps you humble.
Absolutely. My mom's 92, and she's a saint as well. She gets up every day, and she drives herself to exercise. And she went to the doctor, and he said, you don't have any, like, blood pressure pills or a cholesterol pill? She's like, nope. She had such a faith in God. She said, nope, don't take anything. Just, you see, chocolate all day. She loves her chocolate.
God bless her.
I know. Well, John, I certainly hope to meet you in person one day after this COVID's all over. Maybe you'll come back to town and I can actually meet you in person. But I look so forward to introducing you to the Mott Community College next week. And thank you for taking your time. And just, I'm so blessed to have actually spoken with you. So thank you.
Thank you. It was an honor. I really loved it. Thank you.
You've been listening to On the Road with the MTA. For more information on our services and community outreach, visit us online anytime at www.mtaflint.org and be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. The MTA, your community, your connection, your way.